Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Margaret Atwood's latest novel is set in the Northeast in the aftermath of an economic crash that sounds a lot like what happened in 2008. But at the start of this story, the main characters, Stan and Charmaine, are living in their car, threatened by roving gangs of criminals. Then they find what they hope is salvation in the town of Consilience, where everyone has a clean, comfortable house, but their security comes at a huge cost. It's a troubling and sometimes comical view of the future that includes Elvis impersonators and sex robots. Margaret Atwood is a Booker Prize-winning writer. Her latest novel is called The Heart Goes Last. She's here in Boston to give the kickoff keynote address at the 7th Annual Boston Book Festival tonight in Copley Square. And she's with us right now in our studios. And Margaret Atwood, it's great to meet you and welcome to Radio Boston. It's great to have you.
Lovely to be here.
So this is a disturbing and really engrossing story, I have to say. I'm well on my way into it. I haven't finished it yet. With obvious contemporary hooks. So tell us about the world in which Stan and Charmaine find themselves, because in some ways it sounds familiar to us and in some ways not so much.
Well, it's just a little eye blink away. So think gated community with a twist.
Yes, exactly. A big twist.
A big twist. So once in, you can't get out. That's one of the twists. And the other one is that it is a full employment scheme, because when you're in that town of Consilience, which has a great big wall around it, inside that town, there's a prison. And everybody in the town spends 1 month in the prison and 1 month in the town. And then they switch over and they spend 1 month in the town and 1 month in the prison. And when you're in the town, you live in the nice house with the fluffy white towels, courtesy of Leona Helmsley. Remember those towels? And when you're in the prison, it's quite a nice prison, because, of course, you don't want to get bad food in the prison, and then you would, of course, pitch it back to those people next time. So it's turn and turn about full employment.
Yeah.
But how are they making the profit? Because it is a for-profit prison scheme, and we have those now.
You know, it's so interesting to be talking to you about this particular point, because I love the way that this program that I do sometimes has these themes that go from the beginning of the hour to the last, to the end of the hour, without me even knowing it was going to happen. So at the beginning of the hour, we were talking about the news of the week and prison reform and the billions we spend incarcerating people in this country
in
a big for-profit prison system. And I didn't even think that this was going to be connected to the end of the hour with my conversation with Margaret Atwood.
Yes.
But here we are.
Well, the problem with any for-profit scheme is that you have to keep it full.
Yes.
So it is an incentive to keep putting more people into the prison system. And there was that big scandal called Kids for Cash, in which judges were taking kickbacks to put kids into juvenile detention, and they were getting secretly paid for that. So you open the door to all kinds of potential briberies and corruptions once you start having that.
Right. The idea here, though, seems to be as well, what cost are we willing to pay for our creature comforts?
Maybe what cost we're willing to pay so that we don't have to live in our car and be attacked by roving criminal gangs. it's not just the towels, attractive though they are. It's the absence of these other sort of frightful threats. And I wonder what each, you know, where the cutoff level would be for each of us. But when Stan and Charmaine go in, they don't know about the darker side. So they haven't willingly and knowingly signed up for the darker side. They've willingly and knowingly signed up for something that looks pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. And do you think in some strange way, in some uncomfortable way, this is the fate that falls a lot of us in the real world?
I think that if we get scared enough, we're willing to make trade-offs. And you've seen that time and time again in world history, and you've seen it in our own history on this continent. Our Canadian election that just happened, that was the twist that the party that lost was trying to use. It was trying to scare people so much that they would vote for them, even though they were, you know, cutting civil liberties and suppressing scientists and all sorts of things people didn't like. They hoped to be able to scare them enough terrorist under every shrub so that they would get reelected, but that did not happen.
I'm curious, and actually I looked this up, but I have to admit I've already forgot. So the town is called Consilience.
It is.
And I know there was a famous book by E.O. Wilson Consilience. I also looked up what it means in the dictionary, but I have to confess I've already forgotten. What's the significance of Consilience?
Okay, so I love E.O. Wilson. So it's just my little tick mark. And Isaac Asimov is the credit for Positron, which is the name of the prison.
Yeah.
So he wrote a book called I, Robot, which has got positronics in it. So Consilience is E.O. Wilson's view of the way nature works with its various who gets to eat whom today trade-offs.
Yeah.
So how things work together in a system. It might be your turn, Mr. Bunny Rabbit, to get eaten by a fox today, but in return... You got to have lots and lots of bunny rabbits.
I see.
That's an extremely stupid way of putting it, but...
No, but actually, that makes a lot of sense. And what about the title? The Heart Goes Last.
Yes.
What does that mean?
Okay, it is something that one of the characters says a couple of times.
Okay.
But you, the reader, can interpret it in various different ways.
Yeah.
It is always the heart that goes last when you die.
Yes.
So reading books such as, books on mortality and things, I think one of those authors said, eventually we all die of a heart attack. You know, it's when your heart stops that you are finally gone, when you exit, as it were, stage left. So that's one meaning just on the physical level. But the other meaning, of course, is that we are very emotion-driven in our actions. So whatever our thoughts may be, whatever our ideology may be, at the core of us is an emotional being, which we usually signify by the heart. So you say somebody has a good heart.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually a pretty nice compliment. It means that ultimately they will try to do the right thing, no matter what pros and cons they may reason out in their head.
Yeah.
And that actually seems to be true, that people who have had accidents that have cut off the thinking part from the feeling part, you'd think they would be able to make a lot of rational decisions. Actually, they can't make any decisions because they go into rational spin. You know, which is better, the chocolate ice cream cone or the vanilla ice cream cone?
Right.
They no longer know which one they like, so they can't choose.
Margaret Atwood, your fiction is often described as a sort of offering a dystopian vision of the future.
I'm pretty perky.
Well, you're a perky person. There's no question about that. But I'm just wondering if your this view of the future that is depicted in your books, it's often sort of scary. I mean, there's always a lot of humor in there, but it scares me. I find it creepy.
So let me put it this way.
Yeah.
If I knew that there was a great big hole in the road.
Yeah.
Up ahead of you, and I wanted you to fall into it, I would say nothing.
Right. You would say, just sail on.
Sail on.
Yeah.
Go for it. But if, on the other hand, I didn't want you to fall into it, I might say, maybe you should think about that great big hole that's up ahead of you, and possibly you might like to consider taking, not that I'm telling you what to do, but you might like to take another way around.
Yeah. And so that's what you're doing here. But sort of where I was going with that question, but I think you've answered it. But I mean, a sort of dystopian future is also a great place to tell great stories.
It's a great place to play with the toys in the toy box.
Yeah.
And the toys that I play with are already in the toy box. So, we're making those toys even as we speak.
Yeah.
Including the sex robots. Great strides have been made. They now have fake skin that can get goose pimples. Think of what an advance for humankind that is.
That's amazing. You've been interested in robots for a while.
I've been interested in robots ever since I saw Pinocchio as a child.
I wanted to ask you how this book started, because it actually, I mean, speaking of the sort of confluence of literature and technology. You started this book as a story on the website Byliner, right?
I did. And today, right here in Boston, I just had lunch with the editor who put me up to that, and her name is Amy Grace Lloyd, and she's a novelist in her own right. She has had her first novel published that got pretty good response. So Amy, I'd worked with in the world of magazines, and she said, so I'm with this thing called Byliner. Why don't we try doing a longer piece of fiction on it? So we did. And that went pretty well. So then she said, what happens next? So this is what spurs you on when you're writing a serial. People want to know what happens next. So then I wrote another issue, as it were, and then I wrote another piece, and then I wrote another one. And at that point, my books and paper publishers said severely, Margaret, what are you doing? And you should turn this into a real novel.
That's amazing. So when you actually started it for Byliner, you didn't know that this, you didn't know how this whole story was going to turn out.
No, no. I was a lot like Charles Dickens, who started Mr. Pickwick's Papers. And then people wanted to know what happened next. And that was one of the things that kicked off his career as a novelist.
Interesting. So what did it do to the form or your storytelling ability? I mean, how did it make you feel sort of serializing it like that?
It's a lot edgier. Because you are more or less flying, you don't have the whole manuscript that you can then go back and revise. So you're flying quite a lot by the seat of your pants, and it's rapid. And you also have to end each installment with a cliffhanger.
I see.
It is a time-tested way of telling serial stories, and if you've ever told ghost stories to kids, you know this is true.
Right, or if you were a fan of Breaking Bad, right?
Oh, exactly. Yeah, serials on TV,
yeah.
Exactly, you have to leave it at a moment of, oh, no.
So did you like it? Do you like it enough to go back to it?
Well, I never know what I'm going to do in the future. It was harder than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
And I admire Charles Dickens more because he never had a chance to revise anything. He just shoved out the pages with his quill pen, and they were immediately typeset and turned into chapters and sold. So he didn't have hindsight. He didn't even have Amy saying, you can't use that semicolon.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the future because I want to ask you about another project that you were involved in. It's called Future Library. And to me, it sounds amazing. So I'm just going to, for listeners that don't know, the idea is that one author hands over an original story or poem to the Future Library. Nobody gets to read it or know what it's about until the year 2114, 100 years from now. So you're one of the folks who have...
I'm the first.
You're the first.
David
right.
Mitchell will be the second.
Yeah.
And every year for that 100 years, somebody will go to Norway, walk into the forest that has been planted and is growing for 100 years, and hand over their secret thing in a box. And at the year 100, the boxes will all be opened, the manuscripts will issue forth, and enough trees will be cut from that forest to make the paper to print the Future Library.
That's amazing.
So the artist, called Katie Patterson, was thinking of where does paper come from, how does time, you know, how does time change things? She was thinking of time as tree rings and leaves. We use the same word leaf for pages in a book, so that's how it all came together.
What do you love about this project? Because there's so many interesting ideas. I mean, the idea that there'll be people publishing in this future library who are not even born yet.
It's very hopeful.
Yeah.
So we're assuming there's going to be people. We're assuming those people will be able to read and will be interested in reading. We assume the trees will grow. And we assume Norway will still be there, all of these good things. So I think people around the world, and it had, you know, a huge number of people interested in it. We live-streamed it from the forest, and altogether, I think there were about 106 million people who were involved with the Future Library launch. So I think they like the hope, but they also like the secret, and they have been trying to get out of me ever since what I put into the box.
Yeah, I was gonna hope to ask you something along those lines, but I'm sure it would be futile.
My lips are sealed. We did a title reveal on that day, and the title is Scribbler Moon, and you can see that it's got time and also words in that title.
Well, Margaret Atwood, it's such a pleasure getting to know you and talking to you about the book. Margaret Atwood, she's a poet, literary critic, novelist. She's a Booker Prize-winning writer and the kickoff keynote speaker at the Boston Book Festival tonight in Copley Square. Her newest book is The Heart Goes Last. Margaret Atwood, it's a pleasure having you, and thank you.
And thank you.
And that's it for today and this week. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Our show is produced by Emma Jean Weinstein, Kathleen McNerney, Jamie Bologna, and Allison Bruzek. We had help this week from Caitlin O'Keefe, Virginia Marshall, Zoe Sobel, and Adam Asher. Tim Skog is our technical director. He was ably assisted this week from James Francis Trout. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. I'm Anthony Brooks. Have a great weekend. Join us again Monday for more Radio Boston.